The following program is a presentation of the Jewelry Exchange and Auction.
We have some bad news for you, folks. Everything you think you know about collectible coins is wrong. Learn more right now on In the Money. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to In the Money, the show that answers the questions, what is it, what's it worth, and what do I do with it? I'm David Bluestein.
And I'm Adam Bluestein from the Jewelry Exchange and Auction in San Antonio.
And we're here each Saturday morning at 7 o'clock to provide an insider's view on the world of jewelry, coins, antiques, collectibles, and so much more. As owners and operators of the Jewelry Exchange and Auction in Stone Oak, we're on the front line with a finger on the pulse of these markets every day, and as of now, you have a friend in the business. Yes, folks, chances are excellent that everything you think you know about collectible coins is wrong. Today on our Insider Report, you'll get the inside story on the true value of all those coins and the currency you have stuffed away in the back of your sock drawer. Also, we'll be talking to Harry Lindgren from Harry's Coins and Jewelry on Bandera Road in San Antonio, and we'll be taking your calls and your emails on the subject of coins and currency, what they're worth, and what you can do with them. You know, we open the show every week with what we call the provocative statement, a provocative statement that we know isn't always necessarily 100% correct. For example, we know that some of you know a lot about coins and that not everything you know about coins is wrong. We've said before that you don't have the faintest idea about what you're doing when you're buying and selling. We said that jewelry is an investment. It's a very bad investment. And we also said that if young people don't want it, then nobody wants it. And, you know, these are facts, and so many more are just part of our In the Money Facts of Life presented on our homepage at inthemoneyradio.com. And we use the provocative statement to get your attention, to start a conversation. You know, and we know that they're not 100% true, but I'll tell you this, they're 99% true, or we wouldn't even be saying them. Each day at the Jewelry Exchange and Auction in Stone Oak, Adam and I and our team of 13 professionals greet dozens of people just like you. People are walking through the door constantly, right, Adam?
Yes.
With boxes and bags. I love to see someone carrying a bag, trying to look inconspicuous, and they're leaning way to the left or way to the right. I know there's something heavy in that bag. We're looking at all kinds of jewelry and coins, currency, diamonds and gemstones, precious metals, bullion, stamps, postcards, guns, knives, bayonets and swords, porcelain, china, crystal, books, record albums. We've mentioned our human foot, Milton Berle's Mercedes we sold a few weeks back. We sold an Indian shirt with real human hair and feathers. We got $10,000 for that. We even sold the sign from the opening scenes of
McClintock,
the John Wayne movie McClintock. We buy things, we sell things, we accept on consignment, we auction all these things and more. People bring us this merchandise very often not knowing what it is. They often bring it to us thinking they know what it is, and it's not really all that common that someone comes in with something that they know everything about. We've been doing this for so long now, and believe me, we've learned more than a few things, not just how to identify things, but we've learned what's valuable, what isn't valuable. And people said to us for so long, you should have your own radio show. And you know, it occurs to me that it's funny. No one ever said you should have your own TV show.
Well, they told me that I could have my own TV show.
Well, no one ever said that. You know, I think I've got the proverbial face made for radio. But that's what we're doing here, sharing this information. You know, during our intro, we say something that it really sounds kind of corny. It says, now you have a friend in the business. But, you know, for fact is it's true. And we're hoping you'll make us prove it. You can listen to our show here on KLUP In the Money every Saturday morning. You can visit our gallery in Stone Oak anytime Monday through Saturday from 10 to 6 o'clock and see what we have, talk to our people. You can attend a Saturday evening auction. We have them every Saturday night, free champagne at 6, and the auction starts at 7. Of course, you must be 21 or older to get the free champagne. To the kids, we just provide cigars, that's all. And you can even listen to the auction online. We do a live audio simulcast over proxybid.com that you can access from our Jewelry Exchange homepage at jewelryexchangeandauction.com. We're always looking for better merchandise to offer in the auctions. When people come in, we sit down, we look at your merchandise, and we talk about it. Your jewelry isn't just scrap to us. We've mentioned before that if you were selling your car, you would never ask the car dealer, the car salesman or a car brokerage, you would never say, how much per pound are you paying for cars? And you should not ask, how much per gram are you paying for jewelry? We have to look at that jewelry, because lots of jewelry is worth so much more than its component value, although, frankly, most of it isn't. But we know the difference. We've had 149 auctions. Tonight will be our 150th jewelry auction in the last 3 years. If we don't know what's hot and what's not and what jewelry is worth, we would have been out of business a long time ago. Your jewelry isn't just scrap to us, and your other merchandise isn't just bulk stuff. We don't shoot you some information, and then after you leave, change the story completely. We look at it. We talk about it. We're big boys and girls, and we'll look you in the eye. You might not like what we say, but it will be the truth. And you think about it, too. If you sell something to us or consign something to us, check the auction 10 days to 2 weeks later and see what we said about it. See what it sells for. You're going to find out. We're just shooting straight with you.
The diamonds don't grow in the safe overnight.
Their quality doesn't get better either. It is what it is. If we buy it a quarter carat, you're not going to see that same diamond in the auction. No, now it's a half carat. That just doesn't happen. The fact is, when you deal with us, you're going to get more information, you're going to get more comfort, and you're going to get more money at the Jewelry Exchange and Auction in Stone Oak. We are licensed by the state of Texas. We're members of the Better Business Bureau. We're certified by the Texas Department of Public Safety. We just got our federal firearms license from the Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms Bureau. And the fact is, if you call us at 210-592-8786 or visit us online at jewelryexchangeandauction.com, you're going to find a whole new level of information and service that you can't find anywhere. And also, you can join us every Saturday morning here at 7 o'clock on In the Money here on KLUP. You're going to hear things you can't hear anywhere else. And I'll tell you that the guests that we bring on here, they're only allowed to come on if they're willing to level with you about what's what. And this is a whole new world of information, so different than what you think you learned on the Internet or what you think you saw on TV.
We have a lot of respect for these guests coming on and actually telling the truth.
Yeah, and when we talk to Harry Lindgren a little while later, you're going to see why we like Harry so much. You know, every week we do our In the Money trivia quiz, the quiz where you win the answer, and we're going to do one right now. But first, let's review last week's quiz. We asked last week for the year and the denomination of the last precious metal-backed currency issued by the United States government. I think a lot of people know that there were gold certificates and silver certificates and other kind of certificates. Americans didn't want paper with just empty promises. They wanted something they could bring to the bank and exchange for metal, gold, silver, even copper, but not just paper. Please, not just paper. And it was not until the late 1950s that the U.S. government realized that okay, Americans are ready to accept only paper and only that empty promise. Maybe we wouldn't be in the trouble we're in right now if we hadn't backed away from that precious metal. But in any case, we asked for the year, the denomination, and the metal that backed the currency, and the answer, of course, the 1957 United States $1 silver certificate. And the prize is a 1957 U.S. $1 silver certificate. We had eight winners: Carlos Lopez, Betty Heil, David Nossenow, Jerry Butler, Sarah Bergman, Bruce Giovanni, Mark Arnowitz, and Fred Baylor. If we just read your name, please come to the Jewelry Exchange and Auction Gallery at 19903 Stone Oak Parkway within the next 30 days to claim your prize. We had other people enter who were wrong. We had other people enter who were right, but we announced only the first eight answers would win the prize. But please come. You can check our website at www.jewelryexchangeandauction.com for our hours. and our on our Contact Us tab on the navigation bar and come claim your prize. We'll look forward to seeing you up there, and you have 30 days to do so. Now, for this week's quiz. Get ready, boys and girls. In 1909, a new coin was introduced in the United States to commemorate the birth date of a beloved past president. In 2009, on that coin's 100th anniversary, special editions of that same coin were issued to once again commemorate that president's birth. This week's In the Money trivia quiz question is another three-parter. You've got to get all three parts right to win the prize. Who was the president? What was the denomination of the coin? In other words, was it a cent, nickel, dime, quarter, or some other denomination? And how many different special edition varieties were produced in 2009? We need the name of the president, we need the denomination of the coin, and we need to know how many special edition varieties were produced. To be a winner, all you have to do is to be the first person, only one winner this week, to email the correct answer to quiz@inthemoneyradio.com. That's quiz@inthemoneyradio.com. You can also submit your answer directly from our homepage at www.inthemoneyradio.com. Then listen to next week's show next Saturday morning to see if we read your name on the air. If we do, you can claim your prize at the Jewelry Exchange and Auction at 19903 Stone Oak Parkway within the next 30 days. You know, enter as often as you like, but only one winner per household per month. Please, let's give everybody a chance. And there's no age limit. We invite kids to enter. We've had some pretty young winners, too. Please remember to submit your answer only by email, quiz@inthemoneyradio.com, quiz@inthemoneyradio.com. Good luck. And now let's go to this week's Insider's Report. You know, the theme of our show this week, Everything You Know About Coins Is Wrong. For 33 years, I've been doing this professionally, but I started when I was 8 years old with an interest in coins. And I've mentioned before how my entire collection disappeared when I was 15 years old and needed to buy cigarettes. And then I grew up a little bit more and started collecting again and started dealing. And one thing leads to another. We're going to hear Harry Lindgren's story from Harry's Coins in a little while, but I'm betting his story isn't any different than mine. People bring us coins all the time, and we want you to have some idea what these more common coins are worth. Of course, there's some really rare stuff out there. Last Wednesday, I paid $3,000. I'm looking at Adam in the eye. We paid $3,950 for a silver dollar, and we've paid more than that for coins, too. But most silver dollars out there are in the $20 to $25 category, and we want you to know what you have in your sock drawer that you might be protecting that maybe isn't as valuable as you think and maybe should actually be spent. And, in fact, let's start with that. Let's start with the coins that you're probably saving that are really just spending money. We know that rare varieties exist of all these coins, but you're not going to find them in your pocket change. And we're always going to remember In the Money, Facts of Life, number 10, the definition of rare is you don't have it. Folks, you should be optimistic and you should be hopeful, but you got to get real, too. The rare stuff is rare and valuable because you probably don't have it. It's really hard to find. And what you have is probably the more common merchandise. You know, I hate the term golden dollars. It suggests that all of these Sacagawea dollars that are being manufactured each year and all four of the presidential dollars that are being manufactured each year are gold, and people bring us these coins asking how much gold is in them. And we say, how did you get that coin? Well, they got it in change, or they got it at the bank. And we ask them, think for a second. Do you think at the bank or at Jim's restaurant when you're getting your change, they're going to give you gold coins in your change? Those coins are copper, and they're nickel. They're called golden dollars, and they're worth exactly a dollar apiece. If you take $25 to your bank, they might not have them in stock. They might have to take a couple days to get it from their warehouse. But these coins come in $25 rolls. They're usually bank-wrapped. They're uncirculated. They're good-looking coins, and they're worth exactly a dollar each.
Sometimes I see things referred to as gold or silver, and they're really referring to the color. Like, these coins are gold, just like your shirt is blue. And it doesn't necessarily refer to the metal.
If you have presidential dollars, Sacagawea dollars, dated anywhere from 2000 up to the current date, and you're keeping those because you think they're valuable, you're wrong. And if you intend to hold them in quantity for a long time because you think in the future they'll go up in value, you're wrong.
One thing that guarantees that they will never go up in value in the future is that so many people are holding them. You want to find one of these 50 or even 100 years from now in perfect condition, you can probably find one pretty easily.
Until a couple months ago, Congress mandated that these things be manufactured every year, whether we want them or not. And folks, we don't want them. That's why you don't see them in circulation. They are building a warehouse between Dallas and Fort Worth at the cost of several million dollars to do nothing but store these excess coins because nobody wants them. Now, you might remember the Susan B. Anthony dollar coins that came out, 1979, 80, and 81. Almost 100 years previously, the United States made a 20-cent coin, and people said, that's stupid. It was almost the same size as the quarter, and in fact, at that time, it had the same design as the quarter. Nobody could tell the difference, and it confused everybody. And when they started talking about the Susan B. Anthony dollars, everyone said, look, it's about the size of a quarter. It's going to confuse everybody. And it only took Congress 3 years to realize that it's about the size of a quarter, and it confuses everybody. Yes, there are very, very few special Susan B. Anthony dollars that are worth a little bit more than a dollar, but it's almost impossible that you'll get those. They were in special sets that were released. The ones you got in circulation are worth a dollar apiece. Today we bought a lot of merchandise from a gentleman who just wanted to sell it all. We got a lot of golden dollars and Susan B. Anthony dollars, and our next topic, too, Eisenhower dollars. The Eisenhower dollar was the large size dollar, the size of one of the old silver dollars, and they did make some what we call blue Ikes and brown Ikes in special government packaging that's 40% silver, and even those, with only one exception, are really just worth their metal value, about $8 each. But the Eisenhower dollars that you have in the back of your drawer are $1 coins that were made by the millions and millions and millions. There's not a reason on earth to hang on to those.
Just this week, a lady brought me some Eisenhower dollars, and they had $2 price tags on them. Someone had looked it up in a book, and it said that those dollars are worth $2. That's a retail price. If you go to a coin store and you want that dollar, and it's true for just about any coin, you look it up in a book, you're probably looking at a retail price, and that's what a coin dealer who has to keep the lights on and pay his rent would charge you if you wanted one from him. But when you have one and you go to sell it, that's worth a dollar. We would give it back to you, ask you to spend it.
You know, speaking of dollars, any currency you have with a green seal on it almost certainly is worth exactly what the number on that bill is. And that includes $2 bills. The bicentennial back, the more recent backs, any $2 bill with a green seal on it is a $2 bill, and it's almost certainly not worth more than $2. I know you don't see them all the time, but we do. We've got an uncut sheet of 36 of them on our wall, and you know what? That's worth about $72 because there's 36 $2 bills on it. You know, obviously, Adam and I can talk about all this so forever. We could talk about any one of these things for an entire hour, and there's so much we want to tell you today. So I want to go over Kennedy half dollars very quickly. If you went to Las Vegas and you played the half-dollar slot machine, they would give you Kennedy half dollars to play with. If you think Kennedy half dollars are so darn valuable, why don't you go to Las Vegas?
Well, now, I mean, I just was just in a casino, and now it's all electronic.
Well, yeah, but if you're using coins, you'd use Kennedy half dollars. Three kinds of Kennedy half dollars. 1964 Kennedy half dollars are 90% silver, right now worth just under $10 apiece, because that's their silver value. They're not collectible, but just under $10 for a 1964. 1965 through 1970 Kennedy half dollars are 40% silver and worth about $3.50 each, although the 1970 Kennedy half was available only in special sets. That's why you don't have one. And if you do have one, it's worth just a little bit more, unless you put your fingers all over it and dropped it on the floor, and then it's worth $3.50 too. But here's what you need to know. Kennedy half dollars dated 1971 all the way through fill in today's date are 50-cent coins. If you really do believe they're so valuable and think they're worth a lot more, come up to our gallery today, because we got a bunch of them in a cash register, and I would love to trade them for paper, because I don't want them, and neither should you. Now, I know the look in your eyes. We're on the radio, I can't see you, but I've seen that look in the eyes across the counter so many times. You're saying, this guy doesn't know what he's talking about. And you know what? Yes, I do. And you might be thinking, well, yeah, but in 100 years, well, first of all, no, 100 years is not going to cure this ham. And also, I don't know where you're going to be in 100 years, but I know where I'm going to be in 100 years, and I'm not going to care what a Kennedy half dollar is worth. Let's move on to coins and currency that have some but minimal value over their face amounts. First one I've got to mention is wheatback cents. 1958 was the last year for Lincoln cents with the old wheatback design. We sold one recently, a wheatback cent, a 22 no D, for $1,200 to a doctor who's excited about completing his collection. We've sold and bought Lincoln cents for a lot more than that sometimes. We have a 1955 double die that we're going to sell at auction tonight that's worth hundreds and hundreds of dollars, but we also have a bag of 1,000 Lincoln cents, wheatback cents, that will sell to the highest bidder somewhere between 4 and 6 cents is my guess. And I don't know, if you're coming tonight and you intend to bid 8 cents, don't let me stop you by saying 4 to 6 cents. But somewhere between, okay, 4 and 8 cents a piece tonight, because wheatback cents are just not worth any more than that. You know, even the Indian cents that they stopped making in 1909, most of the ones we see are damaged or cleaned, and they're worth a quarter or so a piece. Undamaged ones worth 90 cents, maybe a dollar a piece. And even even damaged flying eagle cents and large cents that go back to the early 1800s are worth just a little bit over their face amount, because they're damaged and they're not collectible. They're very common. A man was in recently with a whole bunch of Jefferson nickels, and he thought that they were made out of silver.
Because they were before 1964.
Right, but, the official name of a nickel is not a nickel. We just call it that. A nickel is a 5-cent piece, and the real reason that it's not a nickel is because it's only 25% nickel. A United States nickel is 75% copper, only 25% nickel. It's just that nickel is a very aggressive metal color-wise, and so even 25% nickel in that coin is enough to make the coin turn white. But a Jefferson nickel, with very few exceptions, is not collectible, even going back to the 1930s, and they started making them in 38. Except during World War II, the United States government needed the copper for shell casings. They had silver that they didn't need. So during World War II, they made nickels with less copper and 35% silver, which right now are worth about a dollar a piece just for their silver value. They're not collectible, but at least they have a silver value. Some of the 1942s, all of the 1943, 44s, and 45s are made out of nickel. I'm sorry, out of 35% silver, and have a silver value. Take a look at your nickel, flip it over, look at the dome above the building, and if there's a big P, D, or S there, that's 35% silver. If there isn't, well, it's almost certainly not collectible. The better dates, you're just not going to find them. And the better dates in Jefferson nickels that aren't silver aren't really worth much anyway. So if you're saving Jefferson nickels, check to see if the big letter is over the dome. And if it's not, please spend it. Get some kind of value out of it. The Buffalo nickels, the dateless Buffalo nickels, the date wears off of those first thing, right away. 30 years ago, we bought them for 10 cents and sold them for 20 cents. Now, 30 years later, we buy them for 10 cents and sell them for 20 cents if the date's all worn off. Even the Liberty had V nickels that they started making in 1883 and made all the way through 1912, 1913 if you want to be technical, but you don't have one. They get pitted, they get dark, they're just not going to be valuable unless at least you can read the word Liberty on the headband that the lady's wearing. And even the shield nickels from before that are dark and black and pitted and all worn out and just not going to be valuable. But here's the clincher that I want to talk about, the small size currency. The large size horse blankets, the big paper money that the United States made till the 1920s, is valuable beyond its face value in almost any condition. But I want to talk about the Blue Seal $1 and $5 silver certificates dated 1935 and 57 for the $1 certificates. I want to talk about the Red Seal United States notes dated 1953 and 1963, the $2 bills, the Red Seal $2 bills. I'm looking at an ad from Coin World from Denley's in Boston. They're a currency dealer in Boston. They're offering 1957 $1 silver certificates, 100 at a time, for $1.80 apiece. Now, in my opinion, you can do better. You can come up to our gallery in San Antonio and bid on them on our bid board, because we start the bidding at 25 cents. And the $2 bills, we start the bidding at 25 cents, and they never sell for more than a dollar or two over their face value. If you're holding Blue Seal silver certificates, if you're holding Red Seal $2 U.S. notes and they're circulated and the corners are bent and there's writing on them and they don't look like they were made yesterday, take them out. Well, I was going to say spend them. Don't spend them. Bring them up to us. We'll make you a courtesy offer of a few cents over their face value. But I've got to tell you that you're wasting your money if you've got a big quantity of those. Uh-oh. That music means that we're up against a hard break. KLUP is about to take you away for some messages. We're not going anywhere. We'll be right back with Harry Lindgren from Harry's Coins and Jewelry on Bandera Road in San Antonio. Don't go away. You're listening to In the Money with David and Adam Bluestein from the Jewelry Exchange and Auction. You're back with David and Adam Bluestein from the Jewelry Exchange and Auction on In the Money, the show that answers the questions, what is it, what's it worth, and what do I do with it? Why do I laugh every time I say that? Probably because I wrote it and I think I'm so clever. our guest today is Harry Lindgren from Harry's Coins and Jewelry on Bandera Road in San Antonio. Welcome, Harry. Thanks for being on In the Money.
Thank you, David.
Hey, Harry, do all coin dealers have the same story? Did we all get started the same way? How did you get started, and what led to a full-time business in coins and jewelry?
I got started, I think, when I was about 7 years old. We were visiting my grandparents in Ridgeway, Pennsylvania, which is a little logging community. And a bunch of kids that I was playing with at the time decided we were going to go down to the local candy store and buy some candy and stuff. And on the way back, I looked at my change, and there was a 1910 penny, and I was all excited about this old penny. So I showed it to my grandmother, who happened to work at the old Five and Dime Woolworths, and she happened to actually work in that section that sold those books. So she bought me the book, and off I went.
Do you ever have that fantasy that you can turn back the clock and be a lot smarter and start filling up your pockets with things and bring them back to the future?
I think everybody wishes they had coins that they had back 20, 30, 40 years ago that they know that they've sold way too cheap at these levels now.
You know, people come in and they're just getting started collecting coins, and they ask for a little bit of advice. Sometimes I say, well, you can't collect everything. I know because I've tried. Do you have certain areas of expertise?
One of the things that I collect personally is anything that has to do with astronauts, moon, lunar, anything like that, because I figured nobody likes that stuff, and so that's the stuff that I can buy.
Well, you've got to get up to Stone Oak more often. We get some of that merchandise. We've got some Air Force guys that bring us some NASA pins and patches. I mean, real things, not the Collector's Society edition. And, boy, we'd like to show that to you. When people bring their coins and currency to show you, how often is the merchandise that they bring you actually collectible, something that makes you say, wow, that's something special? And how often is it just a little or no collector value?
Little or no collector value usually is probably in the lower percentage. I'd say probably less than 10%. But anything that would be extraordinary is probably also only about 1%. And then you have the normal stuff that parents have saved for their kids and pass it on, and they come in to see what type of value it is at these present levels.
Things like modern commemorative coins?
You know, a lot of TV stuff, unfortunately. A lot of TV promotional things come in the door. Gold-colored state quarters and that type of thing.
A lot of mint sets and proof sets, probably.
Absolutely.
Yeah, things that were purchased at high prices and people feel hopeful about, and then when they finally bring it in to somebody knowledgeable, I mean, I understand they get a few pieces, and I show them my big box of stuff, and I got a few pieces too. Nothing really very rare about that merchandise. What are some of the more valuable things that people have brought to you?
You know, I had the fortunate experience of I had a lady walk into my store, and this had to have been 15 or 20 years ago, and brought me a $20 Mormon gold piece and wanted it put in a bezel.
Oh, boy.
I almost fainted. I pleaded with her not to do it, but she absolutely insisted. So I took a flip, and I trimmed it out and covered it and made sure that when I put in the bezel, it couldn't be damaged on either the back or the front, so that helped her.
Well, we have some similar experiences, just never with a Mormon gold piece. But for our listeners who don't understand why we're both going, oh, my God, how could they do that, would you explain to people what happens when you take a coin and make jewelry out of it?
When you take a coin and either make jewelry or drill it or weld a loop on top so you can wear it on a necklace, basically what happens is it damages the coin either on the surfaces or the edges, and in most cases it can turn it into just a lump of gold, period.
Wow. Well, I've got a question for you. This has to do with something we didn't get to talk about on our insider's report, but Harry, I'm going to throw you a softball. How should one clean their coins?
They should not. I never recommend anybody to do that, and we probably get that question at least a dozen times a day.
Someone asked me recently, they said, not even rub it with a cloth? I said, no, certainly not rub it with a cloth. When you look at this rare, high-power, high-priced merchandise under magnification, oh, you see a complete history of where that coin has been and how it's been treated.
Absolutely.
You know, people don't understand, too, that when you take a coin, a silver coin, for example, and dip it in silver cleaner, you know, the coin that has oxidation on it, the oxidation is a silver sulfide or a silver oxide, and the oxygen came, or the sulfur came from the air or from the environment or the paper it was stored in. But where did that silver come from that you're removing from that coin?
It came from the coin.
It came from the coin. You're taking away part of that coin. You do that once or twice, and especially if you don't rinse it well, that coin is different, and it's gone forever.
Absolutely correct. Yeah. And most of them have acid intensifiers in it to make it brilliant, and that really will ruin or damage a coin.
Yeah. You know, Harry, I was retired for a few years, and I couldn't stand it. I missed the treasure hunt. I missed the mystery. I wanted to ask you, though, why don't we just go out and get real jobs?
This is way more fun.
It's a treasure hunt, right?
It is. Every day. Every day is different. You know, new people come into your store, and you get to see a lot of things. You may not get to buy everything if you don't have an opportunity to, but just the idea that you got to share the experience that they had, right, and that how they got it, it's just phenomenal. I love it.
Isn't that the frustrating part, though? I tell people all the time, and I'm not going to try to talk you out of it, unless it's something really good. Yeah, then you just want to own it. And in our business, it's wonderful because I'm sure you have the same experience. We've gotten to own just about everything, even if it's just for a few days until it's gone.
Right.
Right. You know, you and I have known each other for a while, and we've discussed this before. You know that Adam and I sponsor the American Cancer Society Halloween party each year, and we sponsor annual Spurs and Rampage events with Christus Santa Rosa Foundation. But we know that you do work for sick kids too, don't you?
Yes, I do.
Well, what do you do?
I am presently the president of Guardians of the Children. It's a motorcycle organization that is nonprofit, 501c3. And what we do, David, is we help children that have been either physically or sexually molested in not only San Antonio. We have 20 chapters in 12 different states throughout the United States. And what people don't realize is that when these kids have an opportunity to go to court, if they don't testify against a perpetrator, he'll go free. So we provide the assistance of giving them the courage by meeting with them and having parties with them and entertaining with them and their families and servicing their needs and their back-to-school things. And so far we have 100% conviction rate.
Excellent. You know, we're asked, every business is asked all the time to do things charitable and to, you know, help out different organizations. And, you know, maybe I have a little bit of sympathy for adults who've had a chance or two or three and they keep blowing it. But, you know, some of these kids, they never even got one chance.
And no.
Until they've had a chance, I just feel like we need to do something to help them and hopefully give them something to laugh about, or at least so they don't have to be afraid anymore. We talk to people all the time who want to start collecting coins. We find often they're confused about whether they want to be investing in gold or silver or collecting coins. You know, we always bring up the example of, well, we just sold a 1922 no D cent. that has a little under 3 cents worth of copper in it, and we got $1,200 for the coin. It was a bargain for the buyer. And so there's quite a difference between investing in gold and silver and investing in collectible coins. Do you have any favorite areas, things that you think are exciting for collectors to be exploring now?
You know, that's a tough question because generally I try to talk to them about one of the things I think that you need to know is what their threshold for pain is. And what that is obviously the financial part of it.
I know what you mean.
And so if they have, it doesn't matter what the amount of money it is, you just need to, I think, direct them from that aspect. If they have just a little bit of money to play with, I think you need to get them into the collectible aspect. And if they have more or money to play with, then I think that you can show them the difference in investing in gold and silver per se or platinum or whatever it is that they have interest in and show them the differences between the two.
Yeah, we Adam and I stick to an asset allocation plan that includes stocks and bonds, but some gold and silver and some coins. And, you know, we're fortunate to know the difference between the two. We always try to make sure our customers know the difference between the two. And our in-the-money facts of life, number 14, nobody knows what the markets are going to do. And I think you gave a very honest answer. There's no shortage of people saying, no, they should do this, they should do that, because I think in the next several months or the next few years. But we always say that anybody who really knows what the markets are going to do wouldn't be standing there talking to us. He'd be out fishing, trading gold and silver on his handheld device of some sort. He wouldn't have a job. He'd be out having fun. What's he need us for? Any collecting tips for newcomers? Well, I've heard all my life people have said, what should I buy first? And what's the answer to that? Buy the book. Buy the book and get some education.
Absolutely. Knowledge is money. That's one of the first things that I learned the hard way.
Harry, if our listeners want to contact you, what should they do?
They can call me at my office at 684-6326. We're located at 6336 Bandera Road.
Can they talk to you about anything? Do you charge for just a casual conversation?
Absolutely not.
And
I'd be
more
than happy to talk.
And if you look at their coins and jewelry and make them an offer, are they obligated to accept your offer?
Absolutely not.
Well, there you go. This is just the real world. We're grown-ups. We're sharing information. And we hope we can all do business with everybody, but we can't always. And if we can, we'd like to. Harry, we're going to go to a commercial in just a couple seconds, and then we're going to hit the phones and the emails. But I always like to ask one final question at the end of every interview. What question should I have asked you that I didn't? And I love it when you're silent because it means I'm just that good.
You're that good.
I'm just that good. Harry, thanks for consenting to be grilled like this. We're going to do just a short commercial break, and then we're going to return and open up the phone lines here in the Money with our special guest, Harry Lindgren from Harry's Coins and Jewelry, Adam and me, David Bluestein from the Jewelry Exchange and Auction. So don't go away, everybody. We'll be right back.
And hi, I'm Adam Bluestein from the Jewelry Exchange and Auction and co-host of KLUP's In the Money. Every Saturday evening, thousands of people just like you join our live auctions in Stone Oak. New and estate jewelry at up to 80% off retail, including brand names like Tiffany, Rolex, and James Avery. Rare coins and currency far below coin shop prices. And name your own price on all sorts of collectibles and small antiques with different merchandise every week. Bid live in the gallery or through our internet simulcast and never pay retail again. It's all happening at the Jewelry Exchange and Auction each Saturday in San Antonio. Texas license number 16604, member Better Business Bureau. Call 210-592-8786 or visit jewelryexchangeandauction.com. That's jewelryexchangeandauction.com. And join us every Saturday morning at 7 a.m. for In the Money right here on KLUP. And we're back with In the Money on KLUP, and our guest today is Harry Lindgren from Harry's Coins and Jewelry. And today we're talking about why everything you know about coins is wrong. We are going to go to the phones and answer some questions. Can we go to line one with Chucky? Chucky, welcome to In the Money with David and Adam Bluestein. Our guest today is Harry Lindgren from Harry's Coins and Jewelry. You're on the air. Do you have a question?
Yeah, I do. Why did they stop making 90% silver coins after 1964?
Chucky's asking, why did they stop making 90% pure silver coins from 1964?
You know, we're going to answer that question, Chucky, because, of course, we know everything. We're grown-ups. But I are you the Chucky I think you are? Are you a 13-year-old Chucky?
Yeah.
I've just got to mention that I've known Chucky. Chucky's been coming to our gallery since he's 10 years old. What an amazing kid. In fact, my son Adam, sometimes he says, you love Chucky more than you love me. Chucky is just the smartest young man I have ever met when it comes to coins and currency. In fact, during the break, I told Harry, our guest today, a story about Chucky concerning the U.S. dollar to Swiss franc exchange rate, where Chucky had the information I needed. It enabled me to make a deal for a couple $1,000s. It sounds unbelievable, but it's true. Anyway, Chucky, we're glad you're here on In the Money. And frankly, in a few weeks, I'm going to see if I can get you on the show as our guest, because I think you have some things to tell young people about coins and even doing what you do so well. I've seen you make a couple hundred dollars in a day taking advantage of what the grown-ups aren't very smart about.
Those poor coin dealers
when Chucky comes around. Anyway, I'm happy to have you on the show. And I'm wondering if anybody on our panel here has any insight about why they stopped putting silver into the coins. You know, the United States, about 150 years ago, made a 3-cent silver piece. I know you know that.
Yeah.
And tell me something about the 3-cent silver piece. Can you talk to me about the size of it?
It was really small.
It was teeny. I know I just cut you off, Chucky. Sorry. It was teeny. Even back then, the price of silver would go up a little and a little bit more. And finally, the price went up so high, the 3-cent silver coin would have had to have been so small you couldn't even see it. So what did they do?
They just made it 75% silver, then they made it to nickel.
Right. Finally, they stopped putting silver in it entirely and went to copper nickel. In fact, tonight we're going to sell a proof copper nickel 3-cent. We call it a 3-cent nickel. We're going to sell it at our auction. Well, by 1964, the price of gold and the price of silver was rising and rising and rising. And I know, and I'm not going to bore you with the details. I know that you know something about the bronze 1-cent pieces, right? And that's that the bronze, the copper in there is worth almost 3 cents each now. And so those are disappearing from circulation too because the price of copper is going up. And the pennies that we have now are really just copper-plated zinc. So in 1964, the price of silver was going up so far, they could not continue to give you anything like 25 cents worth of silver in a quarter. And so rather than cutting back on the silver content and back on the silver content, they said, we know that the American public will take paper now with no gold and silver backing. Maybe they'll take a coin that says 25 cents that has about 3 cents worth of copper and nickel in it. And you know what? We did. And so why give us silver when we'll take copper and nickel?
Well.
So anyway, does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Anything else for us, Chucky?
Oh, no.
We're going to see you at the auction tonight?
Yeah, probably.
I hope so. Chucky, thanks for calling. And I'm going to talk to you about coming on and being a guest. We love talking to you, and I'd love to hear more about how you got started. Thanks, Chucky. See you tonight.
All right, let's go to line two. We have Connor on the line.
Number?
Hi, Connor. Welcome to In the Money with David and Adam Bluestein. And our guest today is Harry Lindgren from Harry's Coins and Jewelry. You're on the air. Do you have a question, Connor?
I have a question.
Connor, before you ask the question, can you hear me?
What do you think is the best set for a kid to start collecting?
The best set?
Coins.
What is the best set for a kid to start collecting?
You know, I think probably what I would suggest for a youngster would be nickels because they haven't changed their consistency since the early 40s. And they all look the same. And you can still find 1939 nickels even in your change today with the modern stuff. So that's probably what I think you would get more bang for your buck and you get more variety that way.
And you suggest doing a Whitman folder? Or how should they store the nickels?
Sure. I would just buy the little Whitman book, the blue books like we call them in the coin industry, and just let them start with that and start plugging holes. I'd send my parents to the bank, get a couple rolls of nickels, and I'd be on my way.
Start filling up the holes, right? That's the way we did it.
Absolutely.
Except we got to do it with buffalo nickels when we were kids.
I'm not that old, David.
Oh, really? I'm sorry. I'm 108. How old are you? I thought we were about the same age here. Hey, Connor, any other questions for us?
I have one more.
Go ahead.
What coins did you collect as a kid?
I mentioned it a couple of minutes ago. I tried to collect everything, and what I discovered was I couldn't do it. I mean, how old are you, Connor?
I'm 9.
Connor, I'm guessing that you don't have limitless finances. Am I correct?
Yeah.
So you have a certain amount of money that you can spend, and when it's gone, right? So especially with the price of silver and the fact that so many early American coins are made out of silver, never mind gold, you can't collect everything, right? Yeah, so you're going to have to focus on something. I love Harry's answer about nickels. You know, the obvious answer is pennies, but, you know, everybody collects pennies, or it's such an easy way to start. And the nickels, there are some tougher dates in there, but you can find almost all the nickel dates in your change. And you're not going to find a 1910 cent in your change, but you can with the nickels, so I love that idea. But our advice to everybody, I was talking to a grown-up yesterday. He wanted to know where he should start. I said, well, you start with a book and think about what you're trying to accomplish. Do you want something that's fun? Do you want something that's valuable? And don't try to collect everything. And then dive in. But dive in with some knowledge. Your best deals are going to come when you know something that the seller doesn't know. So you should try to be smart about what you're doing.
Yeah.
Does that answer it, Connor? Okay.
All right,
hey,
thanks,
great.
Connor.
Hope to see you around sometime. Thanks for calling, Connor. Bye bye.
And I think we have time for one more question on the phones. We have Chris on line 3. Welcome to In the Money with David and Adam Bluestein. Our guest today is Harry Lindgren from Harry's Coins and Jewelry. You're on the air, Chris. Do you have a question?
Yes, I do. The question is I'm looking to buying some stuff for my future, and I'm looking into gold, silver, platinum, and the question I'm having is what is the better item to buy? Because my research has been found that platinum is a little more rare than gold, but yet it's cheaper than gold.
Actually, so, you're correct, Chris, but one of the problems that you need to entertain, and you need to go to any of your local coin stores and talk to the people that own them or the people that work there. One of the problems that you're going to be faced with when you're talking about platinum is what they call the premiums to buy and the spreads to sell. The problem with platinum is not a lot of people at this particular juncture are happy with it because it has gone below the price of gold when it was always higher than gold, and so they've kind of got defrayed on that particular idea. And the charge to resell that to a dealer is a little bit high. I think you're better off if you take the current price of silver and the current price of gold and divide the price of silver into gold, and that number is over 45, the ratio is 45 to 1 or better, then you should be a buyer of silver.
Right. Okay.
You know, we ask people to keep in mind that nobody knows what the markets are going to do, and ultimately you're going to make your own decisions. Harry's certainly an expert. I consider myself an expert. But I'll tell you could line up 20 experts, people with a lot of experience and a lot of good credentials, and get 20 different answers. When the ratios get out of sync, it means one metal is probably too low or the other metal's too high. And ultimately, you're the guy who's going to, you know, we say you pays your money and you takes your chances. And, you know, none of us want to become just another one of those idiots who gave you some advice that cost you money. And eventually, you just have to make that decision. There's nothing else you can do.
Right.
My answer to that question is that the value of anything has to do with supply and demand. I know you mentioned that platinum is more rare, but I'd say that gold is in more demand. And that I think that demand has overcome the rarity of platinum. That most of the time when people want to come in and buy and sell some kind of bullion, they're talking about gold and silver. And that platinum, we just don't see that often. So although it's more rare, it's just not as much in demand, and therefore the price isn't as high. That it's just not as popular of an investment.
As of right now.
But as Harry mentioned, the spreads are wide because there's not an abundant supply of it. When you want to buy it, you got to pay way over spot for it. Right. And so now the spot price could climb up, and maybe what you can get for that coin doesn't climb up a commensurate amount. And so whenever there's a big buy-sell spread, a lot of that money might be going to a broker and won't necessarily go to you. So, you know, okay, maybe rare, maybe desirable, but maybe not a good investment. Maybe. You know, once again, here you got three experts, four different answers, and you're just going to have to make your own decisions. We can talk about it, but are you going to push the button, yes or no? And that's you're the guy who has to live with the result.
Ultimately, diversification is never a bad thing.
Great protection, right. Diversification.
Does that answer your coin, Chris? Does that answer your question, Chris?
Well, a little bit, but like you said, there's, you know, 1,000 different people that's going to have their own opinions, and it all boils down to mine.
But, you know, Harry's down on Bandera Road. We're up on Stone Oak Parkway. I don't know who you live closer to, but come on in.
That's where I'm going this Saturday.
Well, come on in and hang around and have a talk with us. We're all going to just share the information with you, but I think we're all too smart to tell you what to do.
Right. Well, I definitely appreciate it, guys.
Our pleasure. Thanks
for
coming. Thank you, Chris.
And I've got some emails that have
come
in.
Let's go to the emails.
I think we have time for one more email. I have an email from Steven. He says, "Hi, I attended your auction last Saturday and was very impressed by the coins you sold. If I want to begin investing in coins, what should I buy and how do I begin?"
Well, I think we've answered that one. I mean, it's a stock answer I've heard all my life. Buy the book. You know, the book will give you retail values of these coins that are meaningless, but you'll be able to compare the values of the coins among a series and see which dates and mint marks and which conditions are better than other ones. But the information in the book, you know, the Red Book, the guidebook to U.S. coins, that information is priceless. It's the Bible. Harry's got a stack of them at his place. We've got a stack of them at our place. Come on in and get one of those books, and we'll show you how to use it.
The 2013 is out right now, and you can see what coins will be worth next year.
It's incredible. It's like the Twilight Zone.
Well, it's true, right?
What else? Are we on our last minute? We got to go? We're out of time. But, you know, we're going to be back next Saturday at 7 o'clock. Next week's show, How to Invest in Gold and Silver. Adam will be in New York for a Gemological Institute of America continuing education program. But I'll be here with the Insider Report. And we're going to have Ben Gerwitz from Jim Oliver and Associates. He'll be talking about gold and silver ETFs and precious metals in your IRA. I'll be talking about precious metals for physical delivery for your immediate possession. Hold it in your hand. I want to thank Harry Lindgren from Harry's Coins on Bandera Road for joining us here today. Harry, hope you had a good time.
I did.
Hope you'll come
thank
back
you.
And visit with us sometimes. We're here. We're going to answer every single one of your questions. Please call us, 210-592-8786. Come and see us tonight at our live auction at the Jewelry Exchange in Stone Oak. And make sure you're back here next Saturday at 7 a.m. for In the Money, the show that answers the questions, what is it, what's it worth, and what do I do with it? Have a great week.
Thank you.